D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Mitch Light, college football editor at The Athletic. Mitch, it's always good to talk to you on a Wednesday since the college football playoff rankings come out on Tuesdays. We saw the second edition of these rankings last night. What are college football fans and analysts looking at the most in the second edition of the rankings?
Yeah, well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I personally, the thing that stood out to me was Georgia at number 12 and therefore pushed out in the bracket, you know, as number 13 because of Boise State would get an automatic bid. And, you know, you can push back and say, well, that doesn't really matter. They beat Tennessee. They're back in there. But like, I spent all off season saying Georgia's schedule, playing those three very difficult road games at Texas, at Alabama, at Ole Miss, gives them some wiggle room. They need to be rewarded for that schedule. They lose a couple games, it's okay. Well, evidently that's not okay. And I just don't understand. Basically, the committee is looking at the loss column, and I just don't subscribe to that theory at all. I just think you have to look at who you play and how you play. I know this isn't a vintage Georgia team. It's not this Georgia's team's fault that they're not last year's or 2 years ago Georgia's team's fault. They should be judged against the other teams that they're playing, and they're playing a very, very difficult schedule. And if the committee thinks so highly of Texas at number three, which they obviously do, how can they think so poorly of Georgia at 7-2, which went in there and dominated Texas? So I think Georgia is, out of all the teams there, is really getting screwed. But again, it's week two. These change every week. So that really jumped out to me.
Let's keep it on Georgia, because the Bulldogs are playing what effectively is a college football playoff elimination game against the Tennessee Volunteers on Saturday. Georgia rarely loses back-to-back games under Kirby Smart. I've seen it reported in multiple places that Nico is in concussion protocol and his status for the game has yet to be determined. What is your initial read on this huge game this weekend between Georgia and Tennessee?
Yeah, obviously the situation at the quarterback position is huge. I mean, Nico has not had the season that we all thought he could, but he, you know, clearly gives them the best chance to win when he is playing well. He is a dynamic quarterback, and, you know, Gaston Moore has done some good things at the quarterback position, knows the offense well, but clearly Nico gives him the best chance to win. I can't sit here and tell you that, you know, I know if he's going to play, if he's in concussion protocol, it could go down to Saturday morning. Truly, we don't know. There's a lot of ways to look at Georgia. You know, looking at them, just watching them play again, you know, they got dominated in that Ole Miss game. You say, what's wrong with Georgia? They're clearly not as good. Carson Beck is making a lot of mistakes. And here's a stat that jumped out to me. I was just, you know, I'd like to do a little show prep for you guys, and at least 2 minutes of it. And they have two games this year where they're averaging under 4 yards per play offensively, two times this year. They had none such games in the last six seasons. So two games this year where they've averaged under 4 yards per play, none in the past six seasons. So it's kind of a group effort offensively, injuries on the offensive line. To me, you look at them, they don't scare you at the wide receiver position. I thought Ladd McConkey, I mean, he got a lot of praise last year, and I'd love Derek's input on this, someone who played the position. I thought he was one of the more underrated wide receivers in the SEC in the past 3 or 4 years. The dude was just always open. And maybe you say he was always open because, you know, they had skill position guys everywhere. But I thought he was great. And I think Carson Beck is missing him. Yeah, clearly Brock Bowers in the middle of the field and all that stuff. So I just think, you know, Carson Beck is – and Bruce Feldman had a good story at The Athletic the other day where he talked to other SEC coaches and personnel, NFL personnel, Brock Bowers, and – part of it's just he's not playing as well. Part of it's the offensive line. So, the opportunity is there for Tennessee. I get the psychology of it. I mean, I know Tennessee fans will say, oh, I hate that Georgia lost. They're going to be angry. I take the other side. I'd rather play a Georgia team that's not good enough to go into Oxford and win. But, you know, it's a lot of different ways to look at it. Georgia's favored considerably. I think a lot of that's with the Nico injury news baked in there, but obviously an enormous game.
Mitch, what do you make of Penn State? Now, some people are sort of up in arms that Penn State was ranked this high in the college football playoff rankings, seeming their schedule was pretty soft. But they did lose to Ohio State by less than a touchdown, I believe, and that was a tough game. But still, many look at it as, man, they haven't played a real top-notch schedule. So why are they ranked in the top five? People think they're just ranked too high. And then you look at Indiana, who's 10-0, and they say the same thing about Indiana. They really haven't played anybody, even though I thought last week playing Michigan, that was a tough game. Even though Michigan isn't who they were last season, they're still a tough out for just about anybody in the country. So what do you think of those two teams?
Yeah, well, I'm going to start this up. Like, I understand what you're saying, and that's a common argument, but you got to rank teams in every spot. Like, who are you going to rank? If you can find, oh, Miami, they haven't beaten anyone. Notre Dame, they lost Northern Illinois. You know, Tennessee lost at Arkansas. I am a Penn State defender this year. I've watched them a lot. Ohio State, like, again, we're penalizing this Penn State team because previous Penn State teams can't win the big game. So we're saying this Penn State team isn't good enough. They're the same program that can't win the big game. And that might be fair. They might not be good enough to win a national championship. But they also lost by 7 points to a really good Ohio State team. They got to the goal line. They weren't good enough to get it in the goal line. I get it. That's part of football, scoring that touchdown. But they've also been pretty impressive in every other game for the most part. And I think they deserve to be ranked in the top five. I think they're a top five team. They've overcome some injuries at the quarterback position. So I've got no problem there. And I got no problem with Indiana's ranking. And I agree with you. That was kind of a good little gut check for them. First time they faced some adversity this season. And, you know, we know Michigan, defensively at least, they've got NFL caliber guys, especially in the defensive line. So I think Kirk Cignetti will probably tell you that was probably good for them. With Ohio State coming up in 2 weeks, it was probably good for them to face that type of adversity against those type of athletes there. So we can sit here and argue about these rankings and stuff. But again, like, you got to put these teams somewhere. And with these imbalanced schedules and these 16 and these 18 team leagues, it's hard to find a lot of teams other than Georgia. I'm raising my hand. You can't see it. Who played good teams, but yet the committee has them as far down as 12.
Yeah, you're right. Georgia's schedule has been a beast. But then you look at somebody like Texas' schedule, and it's not as strong, but they're still ranked higher than Georgia. And I get it. I understand it. But a team that I am interested in is Army. If Army in 2 weeks beats Notre Dame, who's ranked, I think, eighth right now, if they beat Notre Dame and goes undefeated, they have every right to be in the college football playoffs, right?
Yeah, they're not going to beat them, though.
I'm just saying, if indeed they do win, they have every right.
I would love to see it.
Even though they have played, it would have been only one ranked team, I believe, if I'm looking at it correctly. Yes. If they win that game, do they obviously go on to beat UTSA and then obviously Navy, the big game? That game will be even bigger if they go into it undefeated.
They'd have to play. They probably end up playing Navy twice. That Navy game is just the regular season Army Navy game. They will have to play on December 7th the AAC championship game, which I don't have the standings in front of me, which I think would be Navy, which would be totally weird if they.
That would be crazy. Yeah.
If they played Navy to go to the playoff. And then they lost to Navy in the Army-Navy game the next week, and they're in the playoffs.
But, if they go undefeated, they have every right to be in the college football playoffs. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the committee, basically, it would be them or a one-loss Boise team in the committee eyes. And, if Notre Dame keeps winning and looks good, Notre Dame goes out to USC and looks good, impressive. The fact that, you know, I'm thinking this through right now. The committee has what, Army in the 20s, 23?
Yeah, they're ranked 24 right now.
24, and Boise is ranked 13. So does the committee jump? Let's say Boise keeps winning. Does a win over Notre Dame jump them 10, 11 spots? I don't know. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I know there will be a lot of public sentiment. Mm-hmm. Everyone would love to see Army in the playoff, and how do they look against Notre Dame? I mean, I guess that doesn't matter. If they beat Notre Dame like the eye test, it shouldn't be like, was it a convincing win? Who cares? You know, and then Navy, you know, how do they look against Navy in the championship game? So, you know, I love watching Army football. I love the option. The Army-Navy game is one of my favorite. It's just, I'm just thinking of like the schedule that Army has played versus the schedule that Georgia has played. Mm-hmm. And if Army's in the college football playoff and Georgia's not, but hey, Army's winning their games and Georgia hasn't won them all, so I'll stop talking.
Willie?
Let's continue our discussion with Mitch
talking?
Light here.
Doesn't mean you
Mitch,
guys
I want to go back
talking.
To no, let's go back to
the perils of doing the show with two of us in one place and one person in another place.
Yeah. Here is another thing that I think could come up down the road, and this would be a classic debate that we talk about in basketball all the time, but it came up last year with Florida State, right? Let's say Tennessee plays pretty well but loses to Georgia with Nico not playing, right?
Yep.
And then at the end of the year, they're sitting there with two losses and saying, hey, we should be in there. You know, we absolutely may have done better against Georgia. We'll never know, but we didn't have our quarterback, right? I always think that that's a tricky, tricky thing to sell for the committee, because what's really more affecting your team? Not having your quarterback or not having three offensive linemen or your best defensive player? I don't know that we have that top of mind for all of the other games in which some of these other bubble teams ended up losing. But what do you think that discussion will be like?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's the reverse Jordan Travis, basically. You know, if I'm in the committee, that's like down the road. If I'm deciding between two teams, that's like the eighth tiebreaker to me as I'm looking. Because they don't have much on the resume outside of the win against Alabama. If they had a few more quality wins, you'd say, okay, I can forgive this. I see that argument, Tennessee. You didn't have Nico. You might have won that game. You've won other big games without him. You've proven that. But the fact that they've struggled so much with Nico in first halves against not great teams, I mean, I'm looking at the – it's like, so if that's your argument, then I'm going to try and poke holes the other way. You know, why'd you have to rally to beat Florida? Why'd you have to rally to beat Kentucky, you know, with all this? So I'm just kind of, again, trying to thinking out loud here. So I find that it's an interesting argument, but it's going to be a tough one for Tennessee. It would, to me, only be a difference maker if you got two teams at the very final spots and you're really going down your line trying to figure out a tiebreaker there.
I'm very curious if they have two losses and they're in the clubhouse and they're not in the SEC championship game, if it's enough to get them in at large.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be what other teams do. What does Miami do? What does BYU do? Kansas State, Colorado. And, you know, all of this is so new. And one thing I don't want to – it's still too early with the committee because we haven't seen – their final rankings yet. We've seen 2 weeks of it. One thing I don't love from the committee, which I commented earlier, is I don't love the, and my colleague Stu Mandel wrote about this, I don't love the rankings by losses. And it's not exactly by losses, because Indiana would be number two, but I don't like the, okay, here's our undefeated teams, here's our one loss teams, here's our two loss teams, here's our three loss teams. It's just, it's far more complex than that. And I think that'd be a really dangerous precedent to set if we start just, okay, one loss teams ahead of two loss teams, because with these 16-team leagues, these 18-team leagues, the schedules are so imbalanced, as we're finding out with Georgia.
No doubt about it. All right, let's talk BYU. My late night Saturday.
Guilty pleasure.
Included,
exactly.
Yeah, I had two things. I had two things on Saturday. After the Predators won, I was all wired up. Hey, Predators won. That was fun. You know, let's watch. And see what's going on in college football, because unfortunately, when the Predators play at 7, you miss some of the primetime games.
Yeah.
So I was watching Adam's underdog pick, Hawaii, try to pull out a
so
game.
Close. So close.
They had a chance. They had a chance to get Adam a big underdog's win for our segment tomorrow, but that didn't happen. But I was watching Adam. But then I'm watching BYU pull a high wire act against Utah, who, you know, one loss wise doesn't look all that great. And you talk about sneaking out of there with a win. That was something. But I'm in my mind watching this, Mitch, and I'm saying to myself, what would BYU look like lined up against, pick your team in the SEC, Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina even. What does that matchup look like to you?
I hesitate to say this because I don't want to, like, betting lines, not my specialty. I'd love to see a South Carolina at BYU neutral field line tomorrow. I'd say South Carolina by 6.5 at least. Is that crazy?
I don't think that's crazy at all. And Mitch, I'm sure you watched South Carolina as I did. I am impressed. South Carolina up front, O-line, D-line, very good. And I think their quarterback is figuring out what he can and can't do.
Yeah.
And not doing anything that's going to hurt them. And I think they are going to be a very, very tough team to play for the last few weeks.
Yeah.
So I thought the same thing. I was not impressed with BYU.
Yeah, so back to BYU. They've got a big-time TCU 2022 vibe to them. They keep winning games, and you credit them for winning games. Love the quarterback. Got to love a Jewish quarterback at BYU, first of all. But you love the way they
– Mazel tov.
Yes, thank you. The way they carry themselves. And I love Kalani Sitake. The guy just loves BYU. And they're a tough team going in. That's a fierce rivalry there. They've escaped a couple times. They escaped against Oklahoma State. You keep waiting for it to blow up on them, and I'm fine with their ranking because they keep winning games. That doesn't mean they're a great team. It means they're a team that's finding ways to win games. And it's just kind of like, again, it's like TCU a couple of years ago. No one really thought that they were an elite team, but they were a fun team to watch with a really savvy quarterback, and we'll find out if they win a couple more games, they'll be in the playoff and they will have an opportunity to shut everyone up because they're going to go against either like a Big Ten or an SEC team, and they'll probably be like a 10-point underdog, and we can either say we were right or they're going to win that game and they're going to be like, you know what, on to the next one. So that's another reason why this 12 team playoff is so fun, because in the past this BYU team would go to a bowl game, there'd be a bunch of opt-outs, and they would win that game, and everyone would say, oh, they beat an SEC team, and people would be like, oh, it doesn't matter, or vice versa. So, like, that's another good thing about this. We're going to find out sooner or later.
Quickly, before you get you out of here, Mitch, on the Diego Pavia front, should JUCO should the NCAA change their rules in regard to JUCO players? So you think they should keep it the way it is? Because to me, it's like, they're not playing in an NCAA, but you're still counting it as them. You're still counting it toward their eligibility.
Yeah, and I mean, I love watching Diego Pavia play. Mm-hmm. We all do. But I think the COVID years, fine with that, 5 years. But I think it's a dangerous precedent you start setting when guys are playing 6-7 years of college football for no other reason than to keep playing college sport. Like, there's some injury exceptions, like what the dude at Miami, McCormick's playing in his ninth year, which is just crazy. So I'm not saying like this is good. I have no idea. My guess is it's not going to happen, but legally I have no idea. But if let's say this does happen, it'd be a great thing for junior colleges, probably, because kids will probably start going to junior college more because it'll keep their window open longer. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, I mean, people who follow college sports, like in the sports media, we've been waiting for this to happen. Like, I didn't realize it was going to be the junior college angle, saying that the junior college years don't count. But we've been waiting for someone to sue the NCAA, like, why are you restricting my years of eligibility? So it just happens to be that Diego Pavia was the one to do it.
Hmm. I just want the record to show that Willie Donick is the first person I've ever heard who has said, after I'm jazzed up on the Saturday night, I'm watching some BYU football.
Said no one.
I was jazzed up because the Predators won a game.
Right. But like, you're trying to keep the mojo flowing.
I was going to watch something. It was either that or, Beverly Hills Cop 2 or whatever was on, one of my favorite movies. Like, I was up. So That game captured me. That was an awesome.
It was.
Willie, don't lie. You was energized to see BYU. Don't even lie. It had nothing to do with the Predators.
I love BYU.
Great uniform game. Great year. I love when both teams wear their both teams playing their home their color uniforms. Great setting there at Utah. Rabid fans. They call it the Holy War for a reason. Those fan bases do not like each other. That is as I always say that Ole Miss and Mississippi State is probably not underrated anymore, but like as far as fan hatred, I think Ole Miss and Mississippi State might be up there with Michigan, Ohio State in the country. And then I think Utah and BYU is right there as well.
Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic, joining us here as he does every Wednesday to break down college football. Mitch, always a pleasure. We'll chat next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Yep.
Mitch Light joining us on the program, 615-737-1025. We will bring you an update on our very, very scientific Twitter poll, which you can participate at 1025thegame on X/Twitter. We will bring you the updated results and more coming up next. Willie Dunick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 1025-1063, The Game.